Yeah, exactly.
And that's what matters in business and life and everything is like the mm-hmm. relationships, the trustworthiness, delivering on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And if you can deliver, you raise your hand, you say, hey, man, I screwed up. And that makes you even deliver more or let the people know that this guy can deliver and hold his own. So it's all about relationships.
Yes.
And people take that kind of tongue in cheek, I think. But you got to deliver.
Welcome to the Fuel Hunt Show.
What's going on, Eagles? Welcome to the Fuel Hunt Show. I'm Joey. I'm here with Drew. And today we are joined by Colin Thompson, one of the few, NFL tight end, founder of a media company, Not For Long Media, podcast host. I mean, I could probably keep going on and on. One thing I will tell you that Colin is not, he is not an accountant.
No.
He's not an accountant?
No. Is that how we're kicking this off with it?
I think we're going to kick it off with this story.
When we met you. Our first and the reason why you're here.
Well, what does this have to do with me financially? I'm confused.
Well, so.
Oh my God! Yes, the story is great. Yes.
Long story short.
So I'm like, did I screw something up in billing?
Colin and I attended the same high school.
Yep.
What year did you graduate, Colin?
2012.
So I was 2009. So we're 3 years behind. We're in the same high school at the same time.
Yep.
And we were on our first flight to meet Baders.
Mm-hmm.
And we
Philly to Charlotte.
Philly to Charlotte. We were a connecting flight.
This is 2021, right?
Memorial Day Sunday. Yeah. I was coming back from a bachelor party, my own kind of, but it was like COVID time, so it was kind of weird. Yeah.
So I was next to this abnormally large man, and I said, I was making small talk. I was like, you went to Temple. You had your Temple bag.
I had a Temple bag.
And I thought you went to Temple. Like, I was like, we just got to talk. And I said, what do you do for work? And he said, I'm an accountant. I'm an accountant. I'm in finance.
I said something like, I think I said marketing. Maybe I'm not. Usually it's marketing. I could be wrong. Definitely not finance. I can tell you that right now.
You never would have said finance?
I don't think so. But I like that one better. Let's go with that story. Who knows? I could have. Again,
my recollection.
I had a big weekend the weekend before, and like usually I'm like talking to everyone on the plane, but like I'm going back to like practice.
That's typically your strategy. Is like you don't say you play in the NFL.
Listen, I'm a nobody. Yeah. I really am. Like in the NFL scheme, like. I'm a nobody. Like if I played for a bigger brand, and it's no shot at the Carolina Panthers, but they're not the biggest brand in the NFL. I started with the Giants. I was somebody there, and I was undrafted. Evan Ingram was the first round pick. I was the undrafted tight end. My signing bonus was $4,500. His signing bonus was, I don't know what it was then. I would say maybe $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So a big jump. And people were like, Colin, down the street, like in New York, like undrafted, go Big Blue. And you're like, holy shit, same in University of Florida. Yeah, I was somebody there. But then I went to Temple. People don't care.
Yeah.
People don't know you. And then in the NFL, I was a journeyman tight end. So I've literally never had a fan come up to me in public in the NFL, I don't think.
Ever?
I don't think so. And be like, hey, are you now Carolina a little bit towards the end?
Sure.
But I was out with Baker Mayfield, like at a Mexican restaurant. Having beers, shooting shit before a game. Sorry.
Yeah.
And no one said a word to him. That's just Carolina. It's just like.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Imagine that here.
Oh, my gosh. No.
Even that. Imagine like Reed Blankenship. Mm-hmm. Not even like a pro bowler.
Yeah.
He would get mobbed.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
No, I don't ever say like I'm somebody else. Because I'm not. I don't need to hide. I try to start with podcast first. Because if you say NFL, then people get squirrely and they.
Sure.
Get weird.
Maybe.
But I like finance better.
Listen, I tell the accountant story. It's a great story.
I'm with it.
Either way, you did not tell me is
it's hard to be like, main job. Because you just never know. Like,
yeah.
Guys tell me horror stories, man.
People are weird. 1,000%. I get 1,000%.
I assume there's.
Plus, you're heading to practice. Like, you're not trying to get keyed up.
Yeah, you want to keep it low profile. Monday. Had to be a Monday.
Yeah.
Because it's Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember that because we got on that flight and my wife was in Key West for her bachelorette party. She landed at the same time. I said hi to her and then I got on the plane. It was like a weird, I wouldn't have remembered it. But
yeah.
So long story short, we connected on some level because we ended up having like a heart to heart the whole plane. Like the plane ride was over before.
It was
we
like a hard work heart to heart.
Oh yeah. We were talking about everything. Great. He found out we went to the same high school and then he was telling me you had told me all about mm-hmm. your wife and all on the journey and like how like what you went through in college and the NFL and like that's why you're here today too is to tell mm-hmm. us a story because it was not easy your journey at all.
I promise not to interrupt and give meaningless notes about Memorial Day weekend like because that's just who I am. I think it all matters.
It's all good, dude.
But
it's all good.
Yeah, man, what a journey. Yeah. You know,
well, when we were in the airport, I remember I don't know how we got separated. I mean, I travel alone, but that time we were traveling together.
You were just sitting.
I was just sitting there, and like I see you walking.
You guys were on a business meeting.
We were going two.
We were going on a connecting flight.
And I remember you walking down with Colin, and there's a size difference. Yeah. There's a notable size difference between the two of you. And I'm like, where'd you find this guy? Like, what's going on?
I'm chumming it up with this guy.
You got double X of fuel, Hunter? What? Damn right they do.
Yeah, I remember you'd be like, I took a piece of it. I just got off the plane. You know? I'm like besties with this guy.
Yeah,
I'm like,
wait, he's like, what's going on, dude?
What's happening here? Colin. Like, he's actually going to come with us to L.A.
Yeah.
So my sister went to Wood, too.
Yeah.
She was always
a great place, man. It's produced some absolute characters and great people, and it's you know, I liked it, and it's in like a promo to Wood, but I like Wood because I was a public school kid, really nice one up in Doylestown, and like the Catholic League is not perfect. It's got, you know, some rooms have AC, some rooms don't have AC.
Yeah.
Some rooms, you know, it's hot as hell, and there's a little snow coming in the window because the snow they don't close, you know, like.
Yeah.
Like it definitely, but you know what? They want your success. Like I'll never forget it. Yes. And so this goes back into like the toughness and like, hey, asking for help. And like, I remember I needed to gain weight, and this goes into the football journey too, about breaking my feet and putting too much weight on in one period of time, but I needed to put a bunch of weight on. So my one teacher, Mrs. DeVinny, worked at the Phillies ballpark like 2 days a week, and then would work up, you know, would 5 days a week as a teacher, like talk about working hard.
Sure.
And she let me like keep all my chocolate milks and peanut butter and just like in jellies in her fridge. And I could like eat them in her class alone when you weren't allowed to eat in class. And so like people like that along the way. And as you guys know, and everybody listening knows, like, people,
they play a part.
Huge
That's
part,
why
man.
This whole, like, it's not as much a thing anymore, but this whole self-made thing.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit.
It's so funny you're talking about it. I'm reading Outliers.
I owe the bucket at
20. I'm reading Outliers right now.
We can't curse?
You can. I can't.
Okay.
It's.
That's my shit is the farthest I'll go.
Okay.
I've only said one or two F-bombs in my life on air. Actually, one was last week. I was with a former teammate on air BSing and one slip because I was so comfortable.
So this bucket that you're sitting next to is called the F-it bucket. And you'll see it has cash in there.
There's a lot of cash, folks.
There's a cash in there. So that was instituted. I brought it to the show to clean up my language, my trucker mouth, because a lot of the Eagles that watch or listen in the car with their kids. So we got a really touching story from Maya a few weeks ago, with her listening with her children.
I'm sorry, Maya.
And I listened to the episode that she listened to, and I was like, I had like a trucker mouth. So that's where the bucket came from, and the whole thing. So I owe the bucket 20 because I said BS.
Maya's bucket.
So we don't demand. You put money in the bucket. It's just common courtesy. Like,
I'll throw some money in the bucket. Don't worry about it. Like all NFL guys in the building, he's got money. Meanwhile, I've played the longest career and made the least amount of money of any NFL player.
Set records.
I'm setting a record there for sure, man.
We're talking about one thing I want to clarify. We're talking about Archbishop Wood.
Yes.
Right? Just outside the city in
Warminster,
Pennsylvania. That's a school that we're referring
to. Great institution, yes. Finer learning.
So you were saying there's no self-made, and I'm reading Outliers right now, and I'm halfway through, and that's about like the sentiment of the book is that all of these self-made people and people that have done great things, outliers, all had help along the way.
They did, and it's even if it's not somebody that outright helped them or showed them what to do or let them use their fridge with their peanut butter and jellies, it's someone that showed them what not to do through osmosis.
Yeah,
or,
that's
you
an
know
interesting
what I mean?
One, right? Like that's a whole thing to unpack of like learning from other people, learning other people's mistakes. They don't even know that they were a part of it.
Yep.
And we probably tell those stories all the time without even really clicking in of like, oh, I just learned another lesson there.
I knew a guy back in the day, he had somewhat of an unscrupulous business venture, but he was successful with it and he had self-made tattooed across his knuckles, and you know it fit really well because it's 8 letters, but it's not true. It's one of those glory stories. It sounds good, but it's not true.
It's a community. I mean, you guys try to build a community here.
Yeah.
And that's like people say it's cliche, and like even in football we're trying to build the right culture. It's like everybody gets it. You're all trying to be good people, moving in the right direction, helping each other, put freaking food on the table for your family, a nice place to lay your head, and then for the rest is gravy from there, you know.
For sure. Yeah, I cut you off a little bit.
No, it was Outliers.
Oh, okay. I got you.
And it's funny too, because culture, you can't put like a ping pong. Gary Vee said this in a book.
Yeah.
But it's like you don't put a ping pong table in the break room and say you have culture. Like there's so much more that actually goes into it.
Yeah, that's a Matt Rule, man. Like at Carolina, I know I'm a big Coach Rule, talk about leadership. Like if you're listening and you want to learn more about leadership, and like Coach Rhule could literally speak for millions a year and go on the road. And mm-hmm. well, I'll be clear, Matt Rhule, NFL head coach, Carolina Panthers, he turned around Temple's program, which is the losingest program in college football history, I think, or at least top five. We are. And then Baylor, who had major rape scandal, major issues, flipped them both around. He's got a massive, huge, record-breaking contract with Carolina. I was there during my period with him of time, to 20 to 22. And now he's at Nebraska turning their program around. He guys is a leader.
Yeah.
But, like, he just – when it came to where was I going? I lost my train of thought. I wanted to paint some color on the Rhule thing. What were we talking about?
Leadership.
Leadership. Yeah, leadership. Oh, like, go back and watch his stuff on YouTube. Like, unbelievable. Our community. That's where I was going, ping pong. So go watch some of his stuff when he speaks to coaches about leadership and program building. The guy's unreal at it. But also the ping pong tables. Like, at Temple in North Philly, it's rough. And I thought I was tough until I went there. Like, I thought I was, like, this tough guy who went to Wood, who, like, physical tight end, who had all these offers and first-team All-American, and then my freaking career crashed, like, rock bottom at University of Florida. Had a bunch of injuries. Like, I was a mess. That's a side note. Transferred to Temple, my only offer, and I got to Temple and thought I knew everything because I went from Mecca of football, University of Florida, when I was dead wrong. Like, the Mecca of football was what Matt Rhule was doing there, and I'll never forget it. I knew it. It hit me like 2015-16, my junior, senior year when I walked in. I looked on a Wednesday night. We practiced in the morning. We met in the morning. We were done by noon. On a Wednesday night, Thursday night, it would be packed. The facility would be packed. Ping pong tournament every Wednesday night. Pizza and wings for everybody. Yeah. But the underlying tone was, while you weren't eating or while you weren't playing, we're going to be in watching a little film and doing some work.
Sure.
But he knew community and culture, and he kept us off the street at Temple. He kept us out of the dollar Bud Light special at whatever, like all that little stuff. Yeah, like dark, whatever it was, Drought Horse or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But my point is, like, he culturally, everybody says the ping pong table. Like, I believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
I do, because you never, all of a sudden, like, even in Carolina, like, people ripped him in there because we didn't win, bottom line. But you come into our locker room, it was a healthy locker room. There'd be 20 guys on the ping pong table.
Yeah.
Huge brackets and tournaments.
Yep.
Like, everybody camaraderie. People didn't leave the building for 2-3 hours after meetings were over.
Yeah.
And you know what? Guess what? The X's and O's, everybody does them.
Yeah.
It's like, great, you need to have a good quarterback, you need to have a good head coach, you need to have good players. But other than that, it's the guys, it's the communities, it's the people that are like, got their crap together and are like pulling for each other.
He did so much than just put the table there, though. You know what I mean? There's a lot of companies that put the table there and they're like, boom, instant community, instant culture. Like, what do you mean we don't have a culture? Well, that's because nobody's playing on the table. No, it takes a leader to step up and say. He would
walk in and play.
Yeah, it takes a leader to step up and say, like, look, like, we're going to do a little bit of this. We're going to have some fun. But then we're going to watch the tape. And this is why.
It's so funny to say that, because at my old career and a lot of other places, you got the leader was actually not upset, but like, it would bother him if you were playing. They put it there and they're like, oh, like, if they're not working, like, what are they doing?
Yeah, there's a whole, we could be here 4 hours breaking that down, right?
We haven't even started the podcast.
No, we haven't. I'm already hijacked it. But cornhole, ping pong, the lounge chairs, the recovery, everything was about, like, the older I got, I just, like, tight ends. We go on the road, we get into town, say we're playing Philly. Where are we going to dinner? We don't need the haze in the barn. People hate that term in football. Do you always work? Of course you work through the event. That's not what I'm saying, but we're going to dinner.
Yeah.
Because we need to, we're building not just for this week, but for next week and next year. And it was, I love my, you know, I maximized it because I was so fleeting. It was so fleeting for me. Where a lot of guys, it was so not easy.
Yep.
There's always struggle, but hey, I made it. I was a third round pick. I know I'm going to get signed. For me, I never knew who my last day was. So especially in my second and third runs in the league, and I'm going to still try to do one more. I'm a free agent. I'm just like, man, enjoy it. Smile.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Smile.
For sure. So, good.
Well, last note on the community thing. It's a lot of people get upset when they're like, this team has all the best players. They don't win. And I was very, at the time, the Eagles won the Super Bowl, one of the best years of my life at where I was at that time. I remember thinking, like, this team just isn't even the best team on paper. They are just so together. Like they're connected. Healthy. Like on some different level. Yep. Like mm-hmm. they were brothers for that.
Like
season.
LeGarrette Blount was a throwout. Chris Long, yeah. throwaway. No, I mean he's a great NFL player, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying it's not Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not whatever, Hassan Reddick. Mm-hmm. Like players that are making big time coin. These are guys that are 1 year deals.
Yep. And they were just brothers. You could just tell they were brothers. They were gelling.
Nick Foles was like done. Mm-hmm. On a Super Bowl MVP.
And then you had the Chip Kelly years where we had what was that?
LeSean McCoy, Mick Vick.
The Cowboy running back we picked up.
Latavius Murray. Murray.
DeMarco.
Murray.
Yeah, DeMarco Murray. And there's all these star studded guys and they kept coming in.
Yeah, the dream team, Vince Young.
Yeah, we had nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So take us back to peanut butter jelly sandwiches at Wood, right? So that's kind of where it began.
Yeah, man.
Right? Yeah. And then run us through, you touched on some of the injuries, right? Run us through some of the journey. Let's run us through the journey from Wood to the NFL.
Yeah, it starts before Wood, though. I think I have to tell that little quick part of the story because I'm very fortunate to have amazing parents. And I've talked about with you guys before. Like, I make it crystal clear when I say this because I come from two parents of entrepreneurs. Their parents had nothing. My parents, they did some things to help my parents, of course, but... Mm-hmm. I came from two parents that are entrepreneurs, work their ass off, and literally just brought us around and doing all what they did. Like, hey, we got to learn this. Every conversation we have, it's hysterical because we compare my family and my wife's family. Every conversation is about real estate, the next investment, the next store, the next opportunity, what we're doing. Look, let's go do this open house because it's pretty cool. We can learn something. Everything's business. Mm-hmm. But of course, tons of love and family and camaraderie in there, but I have to say that it was huge for me. My mom for the hard work part, my dad as well, but my dad for mindset and visualization. And like, this is 2003 in a car ride.
Colin's mom owns one of the most prestigious fudge kitchen.
Shout out to the fudge kitchen. She's continuing that legacy. That was 50 years. The Bolger brothers built that and she purchased it. But so boutique retailer, but it just tells a little bit of the story of where I come from.
It sounds like you were talking about ideas. And you were talking about opportunities. You weren't talking about people. You weren't talking about gossip. People.
No one was ever out to get you. You control your control your mind. You control your mindfulness. The book, The Secret, all about that. Like, and people make fun of that book, but it's got great underlying messages.
Great
about,
book.
Yeah. Great. So that's kind of where I come from. And then, literally, and this is a good part of the story was, I'm like, I want to play football. I want to play in the NFL. Okay, mom and dad's like, all right. Like, there was no flinch. There was no eye roll. There was no nothing. Sure. They're like, okay, great. You can do it. But then we got to show you the roadmap. So to the story, the New York Giants won the Super Bowl, and my mom's friend from high school was a defensive coordinator all around the NFL. What the Giants at one point in time, you end up leaving the Giants, and the next year they won the Super Bowl. So my mom's like, again, we're in Eagles country. My mom took me out of school. She's like, you want to play in the NFL? You need to see this with your own two eyes. So we saw the ticker tape parade in New York City when the Giants won their first Super Bowl with Eli Manning. And I remember literally being like, this is the wildest thing I've ever seen in my own two eyes. We actually came into 9/11 on a train, and there's nothing there, obviously. And you're just like, it was like silence, like crazy raucous giant fans in a subway to like silence in 9/11. And then open the train doors back up into Manhattan, and it's just like pure bedlam. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that. So the visualization part, you need to see what it looks like, growing up, meeting Jerome Bettis, like in the Steelers locker room and going to Dave and Buster's with him and like the Steelers players after games. Like I saw all that as a kid and my parents did everything they could for me to see that. So that's the beginning part. So then I play football, youth football, Mount Carmel Romans in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, where I grew up. I was a basketball and hockey player too. Still hockey's my favorite sport to this day.
Yeah.
Huge Flyers fan.
The first thing I said, like, let me send you some gear after the flight.
Hockey.
And the first thing he asked for was the people on hockey team.
So wear it.
Yeah, yeah. I was like,
light the lamp on the back or whatever it is. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I think it's light the lamp or whatever it is.
Yeah, light the lamp.
I love it, man. I wear it all the time. People are like, what are you doing? It's kind of nice because like that's my passion. Actually, that and I've gotten to Premier League soccer, which is a weird one. I never, ever would have thought I'd be a soccer fan, but I love Tottenham. We're not going to get into that. It's a different day. So yeah, Wood. I transferred to Wood and I get there and a great life lesson off the jump was there's like three or four like really good players on our freshman football team that were different. And I was blessed to be one of them. And we're in line to get our gear This is how they tell you back in the day. It's not like now everyone's like, sit down with the coach and have a conversation about your status, right? Like,
yeah,
this is not even that long ago. It's amazing how the world's changed now that you think about it. And literally, it was I was the third guy in the line. And he said, all right, Joey, all right, Frank, you're up. And I was ready for, all right, Colin, go. And I didn't go. They didn't call me or the next guy. So Joey and Frank went up. And they were playing freshmen. They were freshmen playing on the varsity. And I was like, wow. Ended up being unbelievably positive for me. Yeah. I was had the coaching and leadership. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I talk about all this stuff with my parents is I didn't realize it. I knew they were amazing parents. But until I get in the NFL, and my best friend in the NFL has been put up for adoption 3 or 4 times, and he's making tens and twenties and millions of dollars in the league, and he's got his shit together, and he's philanthropic, and he's a great guy, and you're like, okay, like, man, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have had his toughness, you know? Yeah. I don't know if I would have. So long story short, I go to Archbishop Wood, man. I say freshman football. I learned a lot of valuable lessons about leadership and building your core and your team and people believing in you.
So you expected to play varsity, though?
Yeah, I thought so. You know, thank God I didn't. I would have got my ass kicked. I would have not been ready. I wouldn't have been ready. Probably would have scared me more.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you were humbled, though. It's like you maybe had an ego coming in, and then you're like, wow, how did your parents help you through that? Like, I'm sure you were crushed.
Yeah. I wasn't as crushed. Like, I was like 50-50.
Okay.
I like also like thought I could, but I don't know if I really deep down inside knew I could.
Sure.
You know where we all been there, especially when you're younger, right? Like now I'm like, come on, let's go. But like even early on in my professional football career, I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like that's Khalil Mack over there. Like, that's Tom Brady. You know, you're like, this isn't like a joke anymore. This isn't like I'm at Temple running around chasing some kid from whatever school.
Yeah.
This is like the big boys. And then later on in my career, I actually had no stress on the football field. None. And I would just like play reggae before the game and walk out and play, where before I'd have to be like eating this and, you know, listen to this music and get this much sleep. I'd be like, I don't care if I get an hour of sleep. I don't care if I get 10 hours of sleep. I'm going to walk out there and I'm going to do my job. Like I would almost warm up less on game day just to prove a point to my mind. Like, I don't need it. I control how this is going to go. And my career took off that way. So I know I'm off the rails, but I learned a lot, man. And I was open and I think constantly learning to be coached mentally, physically, like going up to trainers, going up to everybody in the building and being like, what can you pour into me that's going to give me another percent? Because I need it.
Dude, I feel like being coachable at every stage of your life is such a – it's first of all, it's not talked about a lot.
You got to be seeking it, though, when you're older because no one –
Yes.
Who's coming to you?
Yeah, right. The scarcity gets greater and greater.
Like
as you get older.
You guys got to go to people. How many people are going to be like, hey, here's what you're doing wrong?
Well, yep.
Like,
but it's one of the most undervalued traits in a person being coachable.
Coachable. And why we made the conscious decision to bring when Bader's approached us about investing in our company and bringing him on to the team. Like, it was just like clear cut decision for us because we like. The way that man sees things that we don't, it's like so.
If you're the smartest person in the room, right? You're in the wrong room.
Or, I mean, we had people that, you know, we know that are close to us that were like, hey, this is not a good idea for you guys to do because he's going to like take the company or he's going to do this or do that. Like scarcity minded approaches. And we're like, wait, that doesn't even compute to us. Yeah. You know
Someone
what I mean?
Someone in my family called him a shark. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, they're watching Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And they're like, hear the horror stories. Yeah. I mean, that's anything, right? You got to take chances and you got to be able to pivot and willing to go to like whatever lengths it needs to take. So, So Archbishop Wood.
It sounds like being coachable, you being coachable and actively seeking it out was
best like thing ever happened to me.
Pouring gasoline on the foundation that your parents set up for you, right? Yeah.
I think I enjoyed, you know, the older I got, I enjoyed. We all have the dopamine hit of like doing something well, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think I didn't get the dopamine hit of scoring or like making a big play for my own self. I was like, I gave validation to myself and to the coach and to the, I mean that humbly, like doing that technique, that coach was like, he's my guy, you know? And the best guys I played for, it's funny, throughout my career, they're my best friends off the field. The coaches that aren't friends, that want to keep the wall up or are all football, I don't play well for them.
Yeah.
I just don't. It's crazy. And even a grown man who is a professional and you should be able to play for wherever.
Yeah.
But I need more. I need layers of relationship. I need to know about your personal life. And that's why the better I played, the more mature I was off the field, the better relationship was off the field.
And that's one thing that my wife Amanda and I talk about is a lot of the relationships I've developed over the years have depth to them, right? Like there's no, the connection is more than surface level. And I feel is
staying in touch is hard, man. You got to make an effort to do it.
Exactly.
You got to carve out time in your week to do it. I try. It is hard.
It's hard. It's hard to say, especially with everyone. Like I would love to talk to you more, but I mean,
but the long pauses between texts too. They used to let that bother me. I'm like, I don't, I got stuff going on and it's not personal. I'll go back. I'll scroll back and be like, hey, it's been 2 weeks. I'm so sorry to get back to you. How you doing? So,
And the more eagles you connect with, the more people that you align with that you know are out there doing things too. They don't get offended by things like that. It's the people that aren't, that aren't doing shit, that are like, oh, you're an asshole. You didn't text me back for 2 weeks.
Bro, they're hard to find though. You know, like I have these conversations with close people all the time. It's like, who's in your friend group? When you look around, they're going to be great friends and you have so much fun with them. But like, who's in your group that's like willing to be pliable, willing to take coaching, living a fun lifestyle, right? Going to dinner, having a couple of drinks, like this stuff that I value, right? Like the camaraderie side of it. And then also like getting up in the morning and training and then like having some like a spiritual mindset, whatever that is, or like who, it's hard to find those people, man. The non-sedentary 9-to-5 mindset, not saying they work 9-to-5, but just like, that's why this is great. And that's why all of Fuel Hunt been attracted to
say, welcome
no,
to Fuel
because
Hunt
it's
community.
Like, you got to do crazy. It, man. You got to grip it and rip it.
That's what I think may have been the segue to us actually connecting is like, you said, you said like, what do you do for work?
And my eyes lit up.
I was like, I have a company called Fuel Hunt. Like, I'm actually on a business trip right now. And he's like, what's that? And I explained it to him and he was like, oh, like, I like,
I love
and
it.
That's how the floodgates open.
Well, you said it's hard to find them. I mean, that's why Drew and I started Fuel Hunt because we felt so alone. So we're like, look, we know they're out there. We know people that think and act like us are out there. So we're going to bring them all together and be a force for humanity, for society.
I literally moved to a different state because of it. And not that like Bucks County, Pennsylvania is not that. It didn't work out for my wife and I. We wanted to find our own thing. But like we were in another place. Okay. And I've like traveled to all these different places by plane. I'm like, all right, we're going to Naval Academy. We're going to go to where all the athletes from college that we, that my wife played with and all the guys that I play with are here. So no, it's been a great journey. And Archbishop was great to me, man. We end up, you know, like working our way, Philadelphia Catholic League back in the day, you weren't able to compete for a state title. Not till my first year at Wood, freshman year. So they lost it my freshman year, my sophomore year. We went all the way to the semifinals in Hershey and got crushed by Sealands Grove. The next year, Allentown Central Catholic ran us over. And then our senior year, arguably the best team in Pennsylvania's history, we won 62-0 in the state title.
Nice.
Largest margin of victory in PA. Finals ever. History ever. Yeah.
That was and, under Devlin, right?
Under Devlin.
Is he still there?
No, he's at your sinus now. Head coach, defensive coordinator, your sinus.
Okay.
We probably had, on that team, we probably had 15 to 20 Division I guys, another 30 college football players.
Really?
Maybe more. I don't even know the numbers, but we had a ton and coaches that came over from decades and history of toughness and physicality. And like, we were just the bad boys and we were willing to go farther than you know, than everybody else physically. So it was a great run. It was a great place, and it was a great journey, man. That taught me a ton of lessons and set me up for the next chapter. It was a unique place, Wood. It was a unique culture, and I love my time there.
Yeah. So what was that next step? Set you up for your next step where?
Yeah, that was the University of Florida, man.
Yeah.
I tell these facts too, and I mean it humbly, but it paints a picture to everybody from where I was to where I went. A dark place. I was first team All-American, came down my steps in the morning. I never forget it. My dad's like, go to ESPN.com. I was like, why is he so serious? I click on there and he's like, dude, you're number one tight end in the country. I was like, I'm like emotional thinking about it. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm some kid like playing backyard football, like whatever, like farting around, ice skating. I was a huge hockey player. Like, So that was a monumental moment, you know, and the mountaintop for me individually, for someone who like never scored a lot of touchdowns or never caught a lot of passes or never, like most athletes that are like these high achieving guys or like have all these personal accolades. Like I wasn't even all, I was not all intelligencer my junior year, but I was first team All-American because I was at these camps and they're like, holy cow, this guy's going to be really good. And I just, we didn't throw the ball or anything. So it was a weird philosophy for me to mentally where I was going and then humbled by my parents. And then the media side comes in where I started my media career because once a night, maybe twice, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, I had a school call me, a coach call me, or I did even more than once, or I have a media outlet from that town that offered me in. So like the you know, the Chapel Hill Times where North Carolina is will call. or you got an offer. What do you think? What's it like? Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally would take every phone call, say yes to everybody. And now some of those people, A, either work for my media company,
yeah,
or B, I still work with the media, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
So
yeah,
connections, relationships, that's my parents too. Like, always connect, first class. Like, you never know who's watching. You never write handwritten thank you letters. There's a whole thing on that.
Yeah.
So again, like, they were heavily involved in that. And then working to the next step, the University of Florida, like, man, there's a spider web here, but Dan Quinn recruited me to Florida, who's now the head coach of Washington Commanders. Will Muschamp, Will Lewis. I go to Florida. It was a great a Derek Lewis tight end coach. It was an awesome spot. And I was training at Central Bucks West, a historic football program in Eastern Pennsylvania. And I, my hometown of Doylestown, I go around a cone, fifth metatarsal breaks on my right side. I was wearing the cleats that were a little big for me. I played in the Under Armour American game. They were a little big, but they were cool, red, shiny cleats. Yeah. I'm like, they're sweet. Like, they fit me good. I'm comfy. And I just went around a cone and boom, the outside bone, fifth metatarsal on my right side breaks. Like, literally it snapped. I'm like, holy shit, this isn't good. This is my first real injury.
Mm-hmm.
Get to surgery. Was okay surgery. I would have done it a little bit differently now. I would have went through the university. They kind of help you get with a doctor. But I'm like, no, we'll go down to UPenn. They're the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, hey, we're not going to treat you like an athlete. We're going to treat you like somebody normal. And I was like, man, I'm big. I'm a big boy. I need a deck screw in there.
Yeah.
So I went to Florida, rebroke the bone again, and then got redshirted. They put a huge deck screw in. They, for the doctors out there, they put a bone graft in. They put like a paste right over the thing, and it's been rock solid for me. I wish all my feet had screws in them, but neither here nor there. So it was really like, okay, great. Then I'm going to come back the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Had so much foot pain, all both sides of my feet, like crazy, like literally couldn't move. Supposed to come in and compete as a starter, as a freshman, like in the SEC, which mentally I don't know if I would have been ready for, but I would have gave it hell, you know?
Yeah.
And it just tons of pain, and I got redshirted. So the next year I come back, and like, we're trying to get orthotics. They fly these people in from Denver to custom fit orthotic. They didn't work. They flew me out to Oregon with the head athletic trainer and another teammate of mine. And we did like 24 hours in Oregon in the Nike campus, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my own two eyes.
Yeah.
And they like feet scan, custom cleats and everything. And like, that helped a little bit. They got me in a smaller cleat, blah, blah, blah. And I come back and I'm playing and I'm like battled in training camp. And like, oh, it's hell down there in training camp, dude. Like August in University of Florida, like right in the center of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Life changing. Like, I would literally unbuckle my pads.
Yeah.
And then buckle them right before the play so I could play with properly fitted pads, but I couldn't breathe in the huddle if they were on too tight because it's so hot. We're talking
so hot.
So I know I'm plowing through the story here, but it moves this pod along. I come back, competing for a starting job. I'm like the second, third string guy. I'm just doing my thing. I'm getting my health. My feet are underneath me now. I'm starting to get some groove, but I'm still in a lot of pain, like tons of pain. I'm like, all right, I can fight through it. Like, as long as it's not going to really do me long-term damage, I'll be fine.
Sure.
So moving along, it's our third game of the year. We play Tennessee. I play pretty well. I come in like kind of garbage time and play a lot. I'm like, okay. And the tight end coach told me later, he's like, you would have been our starter probably against at LSU, which is one of the hardest places to play in the country. You would have been our starter the next week, but you got hurt. I'm like, yeah, I know. So I played in Tennessee game. I felt fine. I go home. I actually met my wife that day, which is crazy. Go home. Met my wife. We had a party at our house. My family was there. Like, it was like all like the local, like, you know, local, but they're all like University of Florida athletes and their families, and a couple people came by. My wife was one of the girls that came by, and we're hanging out, having a great time. Get up Sunday morning, like, I'm going to breakfast. I'm like, man, my foot is killing me. My left foot now, broke my right foot twice.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know what this is. I go into the training room. I'm like, my foot is really bad right now, really weird, like eerie feeling. So I get it checked, and it was a navicular stress fracture. It's what Joel Embiid had. So when Joel early in his time in Philly, like, they're like, hey, low management, everyone's rolling their eyes, but man, I know what that injury is like. It is like, you can't put a screw in it and fix it. It's got to naturally heal. And if you're a bigger boy.
Yep.
So I was good. Everything was fine. Florida's like, hey, just take another year, man. You're going to be healthy as a clam next year. It's going to be perfect. You're going to be our starter. The guys are going to graduate. You'll come back, be better than ever. Great. Not the case. 2 weeks later, out of nowhere, I get a tap on the shoulder. Come meet with us in the room. Okay, great. Doctors pull me in. They're like, hey, your career's over, University of Florida. I'm like, well, what do you mean? I'll go walk onto the basketball team. I just spent my life to be. What do you mean?
Yeah.
I'll go walk on a baseball. I'll just shag balls, or I'll do something. I'm going to be an athlete. I'm going to play in the NFL. What are you talking about? They're like, dude, you're done. You're not going to be able to walk with your kids. You're not going to be able to run. You should never be able to play sports again.
What?
Oh, yeah, man. Rock bottom. So my parents flew down. They're like, we'll fly them down.
So this is the dark place you're talking about?
This is where it gets real dark. So that's why I like to tell them the top of the mountain, because it was at the top. Like, everything you ever wanted. Kid from Philly going to freaking University of Florida with palm trees. Like, and Sharif Floyd, actually, from Philly, had a huge influence on me with that. But
it's just crazy that society limits people. Like mm-hmm. who are they? These doctors, whoever told you this, to tell you that you won't be able to walk with your kids, or you'll never be able to play sports.
They're literally like, if you continue to play, like, you're never going to be able to, like, coach your kids, bend over, pick your kids up. I'm like,
why do we continue? Like, why? I don't understand why society.
They wanted my scholarship because I wasn't producing. And this is big business college football before it is now, which is a whole 15 podcast. But so I was like, all right, you want my scholarship? That's fine. Like, I've kicked and screamed, like, kicked on my way out. Like, no, like, I'm flying to the best foot specialist in the world. I flew to see him, Robert Anderson, Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm like, we'll pay for it. I'm like, no, I don't want you guys involved in any of it.
Yeah.
I don't want you guys touching any of it. It's like, we'll still fly you to him, but, like, your career is over. It's like, all right, screw you. So I flew myself up. He's like, no, you just need a couple months off. You'll be fine. So I take a couple months and I'm like, I'm ready to go. I'll work out for the team, whatever you need. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't grant it to me.
Really?
We already gave you a scholarship. Yeah, who ended up being a friend of mine. I hated the guy, right, because he took my spot. But I ended up playing with him in the NFL, and he's a great dude. But,
yeah,
long story short, that was it at Florida, and I had a .9 GPA that next semester and pretty much partied my way out of school and trained like an ox, which is crazy that I was doing both at such a high level, the partying part and the training part. But that's what happens when you're young, I guess. I was just running around and traveling and, like, hey, not a student-athlete anymore. Like, I'm just I'm a student. Mm-hmm. I would, like, sneak into the football weight room at night and work out in there and just, like, said, I'm going to be in the best shape of my life. I'm going to focus on, like, football, and I'm going to leave. So I end up leaving, and I went everywhere, man. I hit on all the people that I connected with back in the day that recruited me, all the people that my parents said write thank you letters to. Call them when you commit to a school and say, thank you for recruiting me. I'm going somewhere else. A lot of guys just move on and ignore coaches and then burn a bridge. Yep. When that coach, like, spend times away from his family recruiting you, late nights in the office, calls on the way home from work. Like,
it's the right thing to do. You owe it to him, to his effort.
Yep. And they're like, do it. So all these people that I've connected with over the years, now they've come back on my podcast. I work with them in media.
Yeah.
So it's been again, parenting, coaching.
Yeah.
So I know I'm moving the story along. And then I end up transferring to Temple University. I went to Penn State, walk-on.
Did that?
UCF, walk-on.
How did that transpire? Was it a connection that you made prior?
Kind of came out of nowhere. There was no, like, social media really then, like a little bit of Twitter. There was Twitter was bigger, because every time I would tweet, I would lose like 1,000 followers because the Florida fans are like, screw you for leaving. But because and back in the day, you were hush hush. You didn't have a podcast. You didn't have a voice. You just stuff just happened, you know, and you just moved along. You couldn't really. Now that's why I love they call it new media, especially in sports. You can speak your truth.
Yeah.
You control the narrative. The best Philly athletes here, Kelsey, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, Lane, they talk to the media. They control the narrative. They call into 94.1 and say, hey, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
So there was none of that then. So that just transpired out of nowhere. I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to Temple. Temple's the bottom of college football at the time. They won two games a year before it too. And thank God I did, man. I met a PT, Joel Roth, who saved my career, who works on a lot of the Phillies players now. Best PT I've ever been with. And played for Matt Rhule, who changed my life mentally and toughness. It took me to dark, dark places, that whole team, than I never could have gone by myself or with another probably program. And that team at Temple was able to go harder, longer, and go to really dark places to beat you. That's why we had a lot of success. And we had 26 wins in 3 years. We beat Penn State for the first time in 74 years. We won a conference championship with
Rare. You were on that team for the Penn State?
Yeah. So it was chaos, man. And it was so cool to be a part of it. And city of Philly is a great city. People are great.
Yeah.
The toughness of it. I loved every second of it.
They really got behind that Temple run, too.
Yeah, they did.
You were like NFL athletes at that point.
Dude, it was big time, man. Like, the Temple T was huge. And, like, we had college game day here. I remember Matt Rhule being like, I literally couldn't even walk to college game day. Like, people were mobbing me. I'm like, this is crazy, little old Temple. So that was the height of it. It was a great run. Like I said, man, like, I went from palm trees, and life can get really good down in Florida. But when you get to Philly and it's spring ball and you just had to practice and you can barely open your hands up to, like, look on your schedule where class is, and it's raining sideways and the paper that tells you where class is wet, and you haven't eaten, study hall is over here, food's over here. You got 10 minutes to make it. Matt Rule made you carry a gallon water jug around campus. And if you weren't, if it wasn't half full at all times, you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because your prep wasn't there. So it was constantly like, oh my God, like constantly weighing like pros and cons and scheduling and toughness. And then you'd have to like go to class. And it was just, your whole day was filled.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot of lessons. So no, I tried to speed the story along, but that was my college career. And there's so much inside of it, but man, what a great place. And a lot of dark times, a lot of high moments. And, you know, there was a year there where I didn't run or do a lower body lift.
Yeah.
Talk about crazy for your development.
Like, yeah.
I'm curious to see, you know, what I would have been like just a little bit, like with upper body injuries, with the shoulder or something.
Yeah.
Cause all that running, man, all your feet, all your powers, your lower body. Yep. So yeah, hell of a run, man.
So where do you head to after Temple? What happens after Temple?
So then I go, you know, get the agent, hire the agent. I go train in
do the thing.
Atlanta and go to a pro day at Temple and run a, you know, crap 40. I think I ran a 4.99 or a 5 flat, but I run like a 4.72 now, 4.73, maybe a high 4.7s, but not a 4.55 or a 5 flat 40. And my agent's like, I don't know, man. We'll see how it goes. And I had a local workout with the Eagles. I had a local workout with the Jets and a local workout with the Giants. It's like a radius that you can go to. Yeah. Like you're like, everyone's invited. If you're like a decent to somewhat decent prospect, you're going to go. They're going to give you a courtesy call, which is really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah. I had 3 workouts and then I met with New England, which was out of nowhere. Nick Caserio, who's the GM of the Texans now, met with me 1-on-1. Actually, no, excuse me. Met with myself and 2 other players on our team that are both were NFL players. One still in the NFL. And my agent's like, dude, you may get drafted now. So I went from like literally no interest to like, you're meeting with someone, like they're meeting. That doesn't happen. So there was like a lot of traction building there and momentum. And then all of a sudden I had a really good local workout with the Giants. And there's a lot of connections. Again, Matt Rule was with the Giants 3 years before as an assistant O-line coach.
Gotcha.
And Kevin Gilbride Jr. was a former Temple coach. And he was a tight end coach for the Giants. And he liked my tape. He liked and knew who I was. And he ended up being my tight end coach with the Giants, with the Bears, and with the Carolina Panthers.
So oh, wow.
Kev, got a personal relationship. Yep. Always played well for Kev. And, yeah.
I got to imagine he didn't just like your tape. He knew your character.
He knew everything.
Yeah.
They know everything in the league, man. They know everything. Personality, where you were born, raised, high school team you played for.
Sure.
Your deep, dark secrets that you don't want anybody to know, they know. They know everything.
Yeah.
I've been blessed to not have many of them. But, you know, like that day, I'll never forget it, when the New England scout came in. He put a play on the board. He put 2 plays on the board. Play 1, play 2. Great. You memorize them. You take notes on them. You move on. You know he's going to ask you to put 1 on the board because he wants to see how you do. So I study play 2. Well, while I'm studying play 2, he's grilling the other 2 guys in the room for personal issues off the field. Grilling them. What happened in this situation? What happened in that situation? And they didn't know that he knew that. I think they knew he knew like 1 or 2 of them. But I mean, they knew everything. High school stuff.
Yeah.
What happened? Why'd you get this detention? I mean, everything.
Yeah, that's wild.
And I'm sitting there like distracted, like I'm looking at the guys. I'm like, you did what? That's what I wanted to say. Like, what happened? Oh, like, past life, man, past life. Yeah. I'm like, okay. So, man, they know everything. So, I go to New York Giants undrafted, and I had emergency appendectomy. I reached the mountaintop, man. I play for New York Giants. I'm ready to go. I'm wearing number 80 in my locker. The 80 in my emails for Jeremy Shockey. I didn't pick number 80. They gave it to me. I turned the corner, and there's Shockey.
That was a cool manifest. We told us on the ride.
I can tell it again. Yeah, I got to slow down because there's so many stories, but I don't want to take too long. But, yeah, so Jeremy Shockey, tight end for the New York Giants, really good player. I liked his mantra. I liked his juice. He had the bald eagle tattoo on the arm. The guy was just like F you all the time. And I kind of like that. I'm not like that all off the field, but on the field, I try to you come to someone you're not
your
a
edge.
Little bit. It's my edge a little bit. It keeps me going.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked him. A really good player.
Something about Jeremy Shockey I love, dude. Like, same thing.
It's just nuts, man.
Jeremy Shockey.
The nutty player. Like Dawkins, nuts. Shockey, nuts. The guys that have the screw loose, they're special people, man.
Yeah,
so. So Shockey's like the man, right? So I have a poster of him on my wall, and I wore
growing up
for sure. And I was an All-Star game. I met him. My mom. I watched him on a parade float go right by me. Actually, I don't think he won a Super Bowl then. He won a Super Bowl with New Orleans, I believe, just New Orleans, late in his career. So long story short,
You're wearing 80.
Dude, I literally turn the corner as I'm there and I'm introducing myself to everybody and all the rookie classes coming through. Mm-hmm. And they bring in the locker room. And they're like, all right, guys, your jerseys are hanging in your locker. They don't give you a choice. You're rookie, mm-hmm. undrafted. And Victor Cruz just retired, uh-huh. or just left. And for some reason, they put 80 in my locker. I didn't ask for it, nothing. I was damn. Usually they give the guys like me like 43. I wore 48 this year for Minnesota as a camp body, training camp guy. So it was a huge manifestation situation, mm-hmm. where my dad's like, you want to be Shockey? Put in your email number. Yeah. I wore it CYO All-Star game. At Northeast High School, I wore 80. I was a right tackle. I wore 80 because I wanted to. They let me wear any number you wanted. I'm like, I could pick my number.
80 it is.
80 it is. So, man. So, play for the Giants, had emergency appendectomy. Played my first preseason game. Holy cow, I wasn't ready for it, but I played in it. And I was like, wow, I made it. We went out to dinner at a steakhouse with my family in New York City after. It was a big celebration. It was close to home, big deal. I end up waking up in the morning, like on all fours on my bathroom floor, like, pulling the trigger, trying to take something to go out the other side, anything to get what's going on in my stomach out of my pain, like excruciating pain. I was my wife, like, we went down to CVS in New York City, I'll never forget it, and I'm literally laying flat on the ground. It's the only place I can find comfort. Flat. And they're like, we gotta go. I called the Giants. I'm like, guys, I'm pretty good with pain management stuff, but this is dead red, 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Scream pain. They're like, we'll see. In your stomach? I'm like, yeah, there could be appendix. So I go in. I'm in an Uber on the way to the facility, and the guy's like in the tunnel going back to the facility. My stomach's just like killing me, guy's crushing me.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, dude, can you please try not to stop as hard? He like barely spoke English. I'm like, all right, it's fine. Just keep going. I'm just dying. I run into the facility. My wife comes running in, which is kind of a no-no. Mm-hmm. It's like the workplace. Like, I'm like, come on. I don't care at this point. Like, but I'm nervous. I'm a rookie.
Yeah.
My wife comes in and they're like feeling around my stomach. They're like, I don't know. We can't feel what it is. And all of a sudden they put their hand on something. And I was like, oh my God. I feel like you just punched me in the face.
Yep.
Go to the hospital. The Giants, thank God I was, man. The hospital was packed.
I know.
What's up?
Yeah, I mean, it's no joke.
Dude, no joke. And thank God I was with a team because they rushed me right in. I was right into surgery 30 minutes in.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like, if I wasn't with the team, I'm sitting in that lobby.
Yeah.
That lobby was packed.
And as time passes, things get more and more dangerous.
Dude. Serious with them. Mm-hmm. So I get rushed in. The guy comes in. He's wearing like a button-down shirt. He had a mustard stain on his shirt. I'll never forget it. He's like, sorry, man, I was at lunch with my wife. This is a team surgeon. Yeah. Like they have multiple surgeons for different situations, right? Yeah. So he came in. He did the surgery and woke up the next day. And there was my wife. There was Kevin Gilbride, the tight end coach there. He came and saw me, my parents. And Giants are first class though, man. They got an Uber and they dropped my wife off in the middle of town. They made sure she got safe to where mm-hmm. she was going. Like, that teams don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
So crazy journey, man. I was like, hey, we're going to bring you back. You're going to be fine. 2 weeks, chill out, spend time in a hotel room, study the playbook, be around the guys.
Yep.
This is great. Thank God I don't have to get hit in practice anymore. You know, I'm like, this is awesome. I'm on the team. I'm eating. I'm hanging out. I'm in the hotel and I don't have to work. This is great. Yeah, right. Well, 48 hours later, they're like, hey, man, we're going to cut you.
No.
Love you, but we're going to cut you. We're going to bring you back. Never brought me back, but we're going to bring you back.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, okay, it's an injury, right? I'll get a settlement, like workman's comp.
Mm-hmm.
No, non-football related.
Yeah.
So even though I think it was stress related, my body was like, I was stressed as hell.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of my career, man, in rock bottom. I thought that was it, and I thought I was done, and then just train, end up with Chicago Bears.
Back again from the bottom.
Dude, I couldn't work out for a month after – going training for training camp, best shape of my life. Mm-hmm. I can't train for a month. So I would walk around Doylestown like 10 miles a day, like places I never even knew. I just walked through neighborhoods with headphones in, listening to like sports talk radio.
Just to keep it moving.
What am I going to do? I can't break sweat.
Great for your health though, I've heard, walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, very good.
So you're probably in great health.
not so much. But man, so it was quite the journey. And then back again with the Bears. Zach Miller almost lost his leg on Monday Night Football, and they brought a workout, like 8 guys in for a workout. I won the workout. Couldn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Got cut today there when they traded for Khalil Mack almost a year later.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many stories there. I mean, this could be a five-hour pod. Bears, and then out of the league, man, hard. For about 2 years, 3 years, I was in the AAF in Birmingham Iron.
Yep.
Running marketing and media for my mom's company. Got called into Birmingham Iron, a league that shut down for like 6-7 weeks, but they were paying guys great. So I went down there, made a little bit of money. I was at the Guinness factory in Baltimore having a couple beers. And my, again, back to the spider web, to the connections.
Yeah, relationships.
Guy that was a recruiting guy at University of Florida, Brennan Donovan. who I connected with, and he moved on and I moved on at the same time from Florida. Mm-hmm. He messaged me, "Are you in shape?" Now, this is after a night out in Annapolis and about 3-4 Guinnesses in.
Oh my God.
I'm like, "I'm in great shape. What's going on?" Now, I've been training. Like, I don't mess around. I like to have my fun, but I don't mess around with my training. Mm-hmm. My diet, about 6 days a week, I don't mess around with. So I'm pretty dialed in. Yeah, 5-6 days a week.
Couple, when you're out doing sand boners.
Yeah, a couple sand boner reviews like I did today. I would be lying. Usually I do like half a hoagie and half a cheesesteak, and then I don't. But today I ate whole hoagie and half a cheesesteak. So I'm like, screw it. I'm coming to see you guys here. So, yeah, man. So Guinness story. I'm sitting there, and he's like, "You in shape?" via text. I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "All right, call me." So he's like, "Hey, listen, we need a tight end, bad."
Mm-hmm.
Bad in Birmingham. I'm like, "All right, well, my agent says I'm going to get an NFL deal. I don't think I'm going to do it." He's like, "Just come down. You need to film. Come play a little bit. You'll be fine."
Yeah.
So connections. He was a recruiting guy in Florida. I treated great. We were great friends. He brings me in. Connections again. Who's the head coach? Yep. Tim Lewis, that NFL guy that sat behind my mom in homeroom for 4 years in high school. "Kyle, we're going to sign you." They signed me. Great. So I end up being there and connecting with this guy named Ron Selesky. Mm-hmm. Ron Selesky went after that to the XFL, the next startup league that's now the UFL, mm-hmm. which is really strong and healthy because there's no real feeder to the NFL. It's just college football, which is plenty enough, but it's good to give guys more jobs. And Ron Selesky goes to the XFL in Tampa, begs the Tampa Bay staff and the XFL to sign me. I end up playing the league shut down in the AAF. I go to the XFL. I end up playing like 6 games with them, and COVID shut that down. Or 5 games. COVID shut that down. And then Vince McMahon honored to pay us all the way through our contracts, which was really first class.
Wow.
Not a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people would do that. And he paid us all the way through. And then out of nowhere, I got a call from Matt Rhule. "Hey, we're going to sign you. Are you okay with that?" I was like, "What?" He's like, "All our scouts watch what you did in Carolina." I asked the people of the Carolina staff to watch all my former players at Temple and Baylor that played in CFL, XFL, and tell me if any of them are good enough to make it in the NFL. And I've had experience in the league before. He signed like 6 of us total.
Yeah.
We had a great group of us all there trying to instill his culture. Yeah, it was a great run. 3 years in Carolina. We had plenty to get into there. And then last training camp, another one of my friends at the tight end coach position who has been great to me and I played well for him is Brian Angelico.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out with the Vikings. And I went to the Vikings for training camp as like their end of the guy. Six tight end for him, trying to help run the offense with the 2s and 3s and
gotcha.
Take the reps off the starter. So.
Yep.
Still going. Going to try to do one more year. I feel great. You know what the shitty part is, guys? Is you're in the best shape of your life and you feel great, but you're 30. In the NFL, you're an old man.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part, man. And they always say athletes die twice. Like, dude, I was on the couch this year. I thought I was dying when I got cut from Minnesota. I'm like, I just played the best football of my life, period.
Yeah.
You literally just did. And everybody says that. You're like in the best shape and all that. But you really are when you really are and you aren't lying to yourself and you're on the couch like, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. No phone ringing, no nothing. You're a free agent. Like, we're all free agents technically. Like, anybody can be signed at any moment of time. But when you're grinding and you hit rock bottom and that phone doesn't ring and there's no agents aren't helping, it's nothing. It's you. So you got to get back to your training. You got to get back to what you know. That's been good to me, man. Everything's through my training.
There's one key thread or common thread throughout your entire career, and it's relationships.
Yeah, huge.
Right? A lot of people, I think, write off that relationships thread and they say, like, it's always about who you know. But that's not the full story, in my opinion. I listened very carefully to you talking about those relationships, and it sounds like to me that you always showed up for those relationships. You always gave in those relationships, even if it was just playing your best or honoring the culture or spreading the culture or really leaving people better than you found them.
Yeah,
it sounds.
I was going to say that exactly. Like, it sounds like you poured into every relationship you ever had, and you never left anyone hanging.
Yeah. No, I try. I appreciate the kind words. No. It's like, that's what it's about, man. That's the lifeblood of it.
These things don't happen for people that just have acquaintances. These things happen for people that leave lasting impressions on other people. And you do that by giving to them.
Yeah. You know, you got to give. I love giving. I think, and you got to give. And you also have to be willing to coach. And you also be like, when you take it too far, when you're really getting fun and you're happy, you got to be like, all right, I'm over my skis here. Or I did something wrong. I think that's a huge part of it too.
Sure.
And I said it the other day, the one guy, I'm like, one kid I trained with down in Maryland at this great, anybody who's in the Maryland area, True Sports Performance, like PT, unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, shout out. But they're a part of like the community, so I'll shout them out.
Sure.
They're that type of people. This one NFL guy was talking to me, and he's there, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to get back. We'll see what happens with this team, that team. I'm like, well, your coach has just left. Who you're friends with, right? He's like, I loved him. I was great friends with him. I'm like, well, where's he at now? And I knew the answer. He's like, he's at this team. I'm like, well, have you texted him and said, hope good luck? He's like, yeah. No, why would I do that? I'm like, well, you care about him, right?
Yeah.
He's like, I love the guy. I'm like, well, text him, good luck. Hope your family's settling in well. And when I'm in the area, let's get a beer. Let's get a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I mean, is that a big deal? I said, dude, it's keeping me alive in the league. He's like, no, what kept you alive in the league is you're a good player. I'm like, well, you're a good player. I was a good player. What are you going to do to separate yourself from the rest of the good players?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what matters in business and life and everything is like the relationships, the trustworthiness, delivering on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And if you deliver, you raise your hand, you say, hey, man, I screwed up. And that makes you even deliver more or let the people know that this guy can deliver and hold his own. So it's all about relationships.
Yes.
And people take that kind of tongue in cheek, I think. But you got to deliver.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's one of the rules of the few is to get give. And we believe like that. Pouring into every relationship, no matter. The key is too that a lot of times people only want to pour into relationships that can pour back into them, right? Like you got to know it. Like I'm going to get something out of this. But the whole point, and this is a book that was given to me by my old boss, is the go givers. You got to give without expecting to receive. And that's where people miss.
Mm-hmm.
You receive more from giving though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
you really do.
Yes, you do.
Constantly. I find myself, my happiest moments are like mentoring young kids, mentoring these young football guys.
Mm-hmm. We're doing like, one of your camps probably.
Yeah. I love the camps. And you guys are a huge part of the camp too. I'll take the time to thank you guys for that. Like huge part of getting me started. I don't know anything about this. And now like learning more about it and to ship stuff overnighted to Key West, Florida and make it work. Like it's really super special. But I try to mentor kids all the time, man. Even the kids like Wood, I'm a friend like on the Facebook page, Archbishop Wood, and the kid reached the ball out yesterday. One of these tight ends who reached out to me, which I respected.
Yeah.
Hey man, I need some help. What can I do to get better? I'm like, dude, you just struck gold by reaching out to me because I will text you all the time and I will say, what's up? How are things going?
Yeah.
And he reached the ball over like on 2nd and 10 to try to get a first down. And that's like cardinal sin of football. You only reach the ball over the goal line when it's 4th down. Or end a game where you're going to fumble. You see it all the time. And I love that. And he responded, thank you. What else do I need to do to gain weight? What do I have to do that? Like, I love that.
Coachable. Like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I wish I had that. I wish I had that mentor. Yeah. I did with my parents, but like an NFL guy. You know, I don't take lightning where I've been.
It's funny to say that about parents, too, because I found that being a parent, like sometimes, like I like to have Parker in jiu-jitsu and be around other strong men because I find that as a parent, you can only do so much, right? Like at some point, they're going to seek outside insight or outside mentorship. So I know that I can kind of be a broken record at times, right? Like, oh, I know what that is.
Like you're a familiar channel for them. Exactly. Like channel on the radio or the television. Like you're a familiar channel. Sometimes they want to hear from another channel, another personality, you know?
The hits. You're the hits.
Yeah, he's the hits. Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. So what do you got going on now? What are you up to now? Anything that you want to talk about that you're doing currently to the community?
Even like how, Mike, one question before we get to is how did... Do you think all of the adversity you overcame in the league prepared you for entrepreneurship and not for long?
Yeah. You know what? Adversity, great. It's a great, throughout my football career, it's a great thing. But I guess I always knew I was going to end up where I was supposed to. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up working out. But if it didn't, I still would have said, I'm going to end up where I'm supposed to.
Sure.
So you have like expectations, you have goals and you have all this stuff, but it's like the journey's the fun. Mm-hmm. The ride's the fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the more you learn, like I never forget this. It really hit me. I became like, okay, I know what I'm in the right place now. We're flying home from some game. I felt like crap. Like usually after the game, like the adrenaline runs off, you get a shower. You know, you talk to your family, you get on the plane, you get some food and you kind of get in that awkward seat. I wasn't, you know, high enough rank to sit first class. So I'm like, we sat a regular seat. It wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. But like, you're just in a tight seat. You just played like you feel horrible. You're just in like 20 car crashes for like 3 hours. You just feel like shit.
Yeah.
And you're on the plane and I remember just like up against the window trying to sleep and we're in like turbulence and you're just like, this is sick. This is awesome. And we just lost, you know, and I'm like smiling. I'm like, one day you're going to miss it. So screenshot it, you know, like be there. So how to handle the adversity. I don't know if I use it as adversity. Like, I still got up and worked out the same the next day.
Yeah.
I never went to a workout and was like, I don't want to do this today.
Yep.
And I've had some real tough times. Like, literally times where I'm like getting cut from Carolina and I was going to work or wherever I was. I was going into the gym to work out when I got cut. Someone was sitting. This was Chicago. This is a good story.
Mm-hmm.
You're in Chicago. There's 11 of us in the practice squad lift. The team just finished practicing. We all come up the field. The team's getting ready to play on Sunday. The practice squad guys work out, right? Because you're not playing in the game on Sunday. So they're trying to keep developing you.
Sure.
Adversity, and this goes to your story. Sorry, I'm off on a tangent, but these are all the nuggets that I got to slow down and realize that people are actually going to listen to this, and this is not sitting at a bar stool telling stories here. Is they're like, my buddy's like, hey, bro, there's 11 people in here. I'm like, okay. He's like, there's 10 people in the practice squad. I'm like, well, there's 11th guy. What's, I don't know, maybe they're moving a guy down. He's like, well, one of us has got to go. I'm like, come on. So before the lift, we all like go into the locker room to get changed. Because we like had like a warm up, and he's like, "All right, guys, changing these shoes real quick. We're gonna do this, you know, maybe powerlifting shoes or whatever it was."
Mm-hmm.
So we all put our powerlifting shoes on. I go in there. There's a guy sitting in my locker. We call him the Grim Reaper. And he's like, "Hey, man, you got to turn your iPad. Actually, I got it right here in my hands. You're good to go. You got to leave the building. You just got cut. We're probably gonna bring you back next week. We may not. We may." So I literally was like, "Well, my first thought wasn't like upset. I was like, well, he's like, go talk with Coach Fox. John Fox was there. 2017. Foxy's a legend. And was like." Foxy's like, hey, man, we love you. You know, we're probably going to bring you back. It's just a roster move to protect the guy. We don't think you're going to get picked up. We think another guy will. So we're going to cut you. We're going to bring you back on Monday. They end up doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, I was like, well, my first thought was like, okay, that sucks. I call my parents. Everything's fine. You're going to see it come across social media, whatever.
Yeah.
But I missed the work. I'm missing the workout. So I literally drove right from there, right to the Planet Fitness or whatever, and did my workout. Like, I didn't even cross my mind. I'm literally being like, wow, I'm a psycho. Like, after, like, not like I'm a hardworking guy, I'm going to go to my workout. Let me make that crystal clear. And I know people listening are of the same.
Yep.
But I was like, I can't miss this workout. We got heavy RDL today. I need to like hit that and run sprints. Like, so I remember like running hills like in the dark, not because like I'm rocky, but literally because like I got to hit my numbers. I got to hit my stuff. So when I play, I'm ready to go.
Yep.
So it never was like a part of like this down, this adversity. Obviously the injuries and all that was some serious low points, but it was like, hey man, it's a part of the journey. I'm still going to make it. Yeah. Like even now everyone's like, you're still playing. And I was like, yeah, I know I'm going to get a call. They're like, and almost like I would lie to people about like people calling me just to get off my back.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I got plenty of calls. Got teams calling.
So, you know, because
I got nothing, but I knew I was going to get picked up, and then Minnesota.
Well, you don't want their vibrations to lower yours. No. Like, you got to stay. You're enjoying the journey, but you're also trusting in the journey.
Really well said.
And you don't want their vibrations.
You hit the nail on the head.
Screwing with that trust.
I never thought of it that way. Yeah. But that's you're articulating how exactly I feel.
Yeah.
Literally, like I don't want their muck. Like, how's business? Well, business could not be great, but it's doing great. We're doing great. Everything's good, even when it may not be. Because at the end of the day. Unless you're ready to open the books with me, sit down and give me advice. What are we like? Unless you're going to come in the weight room with me and help me with my, heavy back squat and my split squat lunges. And like, what are we doing? Let's just talk about something else. Let's watch the game and bullshit about that. Like, so that's how I was. I found myself last couple of years being like, oh yeah, things are good. Now I'm honest with my wife and my family.
Yeah.
But like people that I'm not that close with. Or I'm close with that I still don't even want to hear from because I know they're negative or I know they're whatever. Or they're trying
to get... That's just a boundary, man. You're setting a boundary up and, you know...
I never talked about that before, but something I've done is put that wall up. Like, nah.
Yep.
Phone's ringing off the hook.
This episode has been a powerful lesson in manifestation, how positivity works.
Manifestation, reframing, boundaries... Relationship.
My mom
was capital.
Crazy, dude. Relationships, crazy about the vision board. Write it down. She's love like, write it down. Yep. I had a tacked vision board. I ended up playing for all the teams that were on my vision board. It's crazy.
Yeah.
No, the Eagles are the only team I didn't play for that were on my vision board.
Are you serious?
Still yes. Still time. Trying. I got to change their offense a little bit. They run more like a. I'm like a true old school tight end. Like Marty Herney was a general manager in the league for a while. He's like, Colin, if you were born in the 90s, you'd be a pro. If you were playing in the 90s, you'd be a pro bowler.
Yeah.
But like the old school, like Todd Heaps and like those cats, like Chad Lewis, like the old Eagles guy.
Chad Lewis,
like the big boys that don't move that great. That's me. Nowadays, it's like Dallas Goedert and George Kittle and Travis Kelce and Gronk, and you're like, dude, these guys are aliens. They could play in the NBA.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They're aliens. They're not even real. They're stupid. And
if
they're great.
Your final stop is the Philadelphia Eagles and that rounds out your vision board, I'm going to lose my mind.
Listen, if you're going by the numbers.
Be good for Fuel Hunt.
If you're going by, it would be.
It would be great.
If you're going by the numbers, the probability of it happening is very high.
Who was on my vision board? Selleck.
Very high.
Selleck was. Yeah, yeah. Brent Selleck was on my vision board. It was Selleck, Shockey, for some reason, Jay Cutler. Don't know why. I mean, Smoking Jay is a legend, but Jay Cutler, great player. Bears. Who was it in Carolina? I think it was.
Probability is pretty high.
I think it was Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
Early on, because I kept doing it. I was like, do it in college. Why you stop doing it?
He ended up being a teammate, right?
No, I missed Greg. He got cut like the first, like, rule came in, got rid of all the old heads. And then Greg retired 2 years later.
Gotcha.
But yeah, man, it's the relationships. I think, too, back to the media side, like, what am I doing now?
Mm-hmm.
It all intertwines.
Yeah.
And that's a cool part about our world and the sports world with the media side. And you're seeing it now with podcasts. It all intertwines. It all allows me to move and shake. And now I'm going to another world now doing some stuff for my mom. Like, okay, how can we make this intertwine? How can we do it?
Sure.
And the new show I created, which is going to come out probably midsummer, is called Food Drinks Football. And it's going to be a travel show, a little Anthony Bourdain inspired. Nice. Like, sit down, get in, have a beer with my dad, eat some lunch, talk to an owner, talk to a bartender, do a walk and talk through the streets where in the certain towns that I'm in, and then pull up in the place and have a good time and interview people and get the culture and the feel.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing too that was huge for me, and this is unique, like, this is probably the most someone's talked about this on one of your pods, I would guess, like, is I, like, grew up going to bars and restaurants with my parents, with my family. And, like, after a hard work day, I would sit there with my dad, and he'd have a couple pops at happy hour, and I would see the fishbowl of a bar in Upper Bucks County and what was good about it, what was bad about it, interacting with people older than you, respecting people in the service industry, building relationships that from this place can do more. Like, all the business my parents have done has been through those places. And it sounds, like, awkward in this, but, like, giving your kids experiences, which I hope to provide for my kids too, of, like, travel and different environments that aren't, everyone doesn't look like you and act like you, and like blue collar people, white collar people. I think that had a huge impact for me, and it allowed me to be friends with a lot of older folks, which has allowed me to do business at a younger age.
For sure.
And allow me to keep the media company rolling and thriving.
I'm ready for the Thompson Family Bar and Restaurant. I feel like that's coming down the...
It's in the making. Don't worry.
In the making, nice. Okay.
Can we edit that out now? No, nice. it's in the making. So, yeah, things I'm doing now.
Or where can everybody find you? Yeah. I mean, most of the community is well aware of where they can find you, but some listeners viewers may not be.
I'm all over all social media channels, obviously, like everybody else. Not For Long Media is my media company. We have about 8 to 10 podcasts, so anything from baseball to food to lifestyle to pro athletes to coaching, we have a little bit of everything. My personal page, Colin Thompson 86, I think it's my Instagram, I don't even know. It's Colin Thompson TU is my Twitter. And then a bunch of different things I'm involved in. I just started a 501c3 at our high school. You probably don't even know about it yet.
Yeah, you have you mentioned about getting involved at high school on our plane ride, and it's always something I think about, so I should.
We'll talk about it, but yeah, I should get all these competing schools around here have 501s that help them support the schools
because
they need it. So that's been fun. President of that, I'm on the board at the high school. I coach football down in Cape May, New Jersey. I help out with Wood a little bit virtually.
Nice.
Staying busy, man, but about to have a newborn little girl July 26th.
Okay.
So I'm getting rid of all the hobbies. You haven't told a lot of people, but I'm getting rid of all the hobbies.
Congratulations. Yeah. Girl dad.
I got to narrow my focus.
Fellow girl dad.
Any
advice?
Oh, man, where should I start?
Yeah.
I think that's another pod. I think everything you've said, definitely let them, all of the lessons that your parents instilled in you, you're going to instill in her. And that's the best start that she'll ever have. And that's what I'm doing with my little ones too, with my daughters.
So. You ever bring them around here?
Oh, all the time. They're here. Do you see the ice cream truck over there and the scooters? They're here if they're off from school. They're in the Archdiocese Catholic school down in Philly.
Oh, nice.
If they're off, they're here with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're here with me. And they're either tearing around on their scooters, they're either rolling on the mats with the dummy, or they're helping care, or I point to the back because there's bagging and tagging going on back there, and they're back there with Mama Rose, man. And care.
I was a little bit different. I was bras and panties though.
Yeah, you know? I was gonna say.
Yeah, a little different than your guys. That's my mom.
You're living the dream.
I was not. I didn't know what was going on. You know, I'm like, oh, whatever. Yeah. It's just clothes. Mom needs it done right. So I would rip open the bag and then put the tag in it.
Yep.
For $4 an hour. I'm like, my mom's like, it makes you sound bad. She's like, you don't understand. Your lunch was $30.
Yeah.
You ate like a house. So, yeah, I paid you $4 an hour. Like, what are you talking about? Up in Peddler's Village, man, where I grew up right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where all our stores were, and that's where we lived. Another thing, too, with my parents was crazy, and people think that's nuts. I probably grew up in 12 different houses.
Yeah.
All within 5 miles.
Oh, that's wild.
My parents would, market's high, we're going to sell. Market's low, we're going to rent. They were just on it, man. My mom has no material, like, attachment. It's all about family. Yeah. Travel, work, so
yeah, I love that, man. We're definitely going to have you back for a second round.
There's a lot to uncover. We have to have like, or we're talking this, and then I can uncover because there's, I've been fortunate to, like I said, have great parents that are like, go do it. You can do it. Put anything your mind to it. Go do it. When you do it, go full bore into it and learn about it.
Sure.
One of my things I want to do is meet Mrs. Thompson because I've heard
that's what we should do.
I got to bring her in here.
Dude, yeah, that's what we should do.
When I just remember because we had some different upbringings. Because when I told my parents I wanted to start a business or be an entrepreneur, they told me to go get a real job. And again, my parents taught me great lessons and
no doubt.
But I just remember
it's not perfect either.
I remember you. You first telling me those stories. I'm like, wow, like. This woman sounds
do it. Yeah. Like literally, my wife and I just invested in a commercial real estate property. My dad's very calculated. Well, we'll see. You know, I don't know, man. My mom's like, do it, do it. Can you afford it? Yep, do it. Like what? She's like, do it. You make it work. And if not, you gotta sell it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, she's real black and white, real to point, no emotion.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have her as a guest on the show.
I'm telling you, she'll be way better than me. Because
that would be epic.
You know what? You just gotta wind her up. I'm going there today. She's gonna.
Plant the seed for us.
I will. any advice to her that you could give? Because I think we're going to start doing address to her staff from a CEO's perspective, like a weekly newsletter.
Uh-huh.
Any advice? Do you guys do that?
Joe is a newsletter guy.
So we can definitely talk, but I think that's a brilliant idea. So she's not doing that now?
Well, she's everywhere.
Yeah.
Like she goes like, boom, she'll be Cape May, drive back from Cape May, then go to Stone Harbor and then up to Bucks County and then go to Annapolis. She'll do it all in a car, fly, whatever.
Yep.
Jesus.
She's all over. So it gets harder to see everybody. So we're like, hey, let's put together a little video that you could send to you.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. I mean, to continually cast the vision and values week by week.
Yeah.
And also what's going on. You know, this is what's going on in the company or the community.
Yep.
You know, and this is because everyone in the community or the company wants to be of service. You know, like that's what people forget. They like want to be of service. So the more communication that you can have of casting that vision, the values, what's going on, the more opportunities people have to provide value. And that's what makes everybody feel great at the end of the day, helping others.
No doubt.
So I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
Well, you guys have helped me a ton. I know we're going to wrap, but like, you know, people don't know behind the camera, you know, on the other side of the camera, you're listening, you're watching, but these two gentlemen have been great to me individually. And our camp and philanthropic and just been huge. So thank you guys for having me. Thanks for support for some guy you meet on a plane, like who says he's an accountant and he's horrible with numbers. Me.
You know an eagle when you see an eagle, exactly. Right? You know?
Even when they're hungover flying back from Philly.
You know. Yeah, this has been amazing. I appreciate you coming in today. I'm glad that you got to finally see the spot and you're enamored by it.
Folks, you come up in an industrial elevator. You guys, if you had could build a custom place for Fuel Hunt, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It's like you come in, you're like, where are we going? Like up this elevator here. You're like, wait, what? I'm parked like on the street with like blue collar folks, man. This is
the place, man. HQ is the place. It's the real deal. House hard work.
I love it, man. Congrats, guys.
All right. Thank you. We're going to have you back round two and then have your mom back too.
Have her back for me. Yeah. That's for sure. She won't talk as much.
All right. I'm going to leave the few with a reminder. Always choose hard work over handouts. Always choose effort over entitlement. No one owns you. No one owes you. You're one of the few. Now let's hunt.
Oh.